It's the Mornings with Ed show, and some days are just simply better than others, man. I'm telling you, this is one of those days for me. Big fan for a long time, and finally get to meet this gentleman. Chris Shiflett in our studios, a brand new album called Hard Lessons. We're going to hear a couple of songs off of Hard Lessons. He has a show tomorrow night at the Wayfarer. We're also going to talk about that. We're going to talk about everything, man. So just hang out, kick back, enjoy it. Live from the beautiful city of Laguna Beach in our Julie Lawton studios, singing Welcome to Your First Heartache. Please welcome Chris Shiflett.
Are we first doing the This Old World?
You were gonna buffer This Old World, as I recall. That was gonna be your buffer song coming in.
Wait, I'm sorry, was it?
You were gonna buffer that song coming in. That's okay. You sing whatever you want, man.
Okay,
that's,
I'm sorry. I have a capoed up. I thought we were taping that one.
You're good to go, man. So yeah, let's do This Old World then. All right,
let's do it.
All right, let's do This Old World.
Has this old world lost its goddamn mind? It's been so long since we've been doing all right. So hold me tight tonight, 'cause I need you right here by my side. 'Cause baby, this old world lost its goddamn mind. I hope you're doing all right. Yeah, we all need to tell ourselves sweet little lies. So hold me tight tonight, 'cause I need you right here by my side. 'Cause baby, this old world lost its goddamn mind. I hope you do. I hope you're doing all right. I hope you're doing all right. Yeah, you're doing all right. I hope you're doing all right.
So I find myself sitting in the studio here like a kid watching his first magic show, man. Right on. This is awesome. So we have Chris Shiflett live in studio. The album is Hard Lessons. That was This Old World. And the song, I guess I was rushing to, and I can't wait to hear. Let's hear that right now. It's called Welcome to Your First Heartache. Once again, Laguna Beach, this is Chris Shiflett.
You're feeling, you're hurting and proud. Don't want no one seeing your tears hit the ground. So welcome to your first heartache. Welcome to your first broken bow. Shakes you like. Welcome to your first heartache. been where you're standing. And let me tell you, son, that it gets so much better. It's just part of growing up. So welcome to your first heartache. Welcome to your first broken down. Shakes you like an earthquake. Welcome to your, welcome to your first heartache. It ain't
That's Chris Shiflett. The album is Hard Lessons. That song was Welcome to Your First Heartache. Cannot wait to hear about the genesis and the writing that went into that song. Just a fantastic artist. Tomorrow, a show at the Wayfarer. And how do you like? You like the water we gave you? Yeah, congratulations.
Water's delicious. Yeah, it's
working. We pay all our artists in water, man. So this is cool. Chris, can we do one more?
Absolutely.
Can I hear Liar's Word?
Indeed.
Oh man, fantastic. Chris Shiflett, this is Liar's Word.
Oh mama, have you heard? I'm about as good as a liar's word. We know each other most every night, but wound up in your bed come the morning light. Driving to the beach at 2 a.m., swerving Sunset Boulevard and back again. Oh, mama, have you heard? I'm about as good as a liar's word. Oh, mama, have you heard? I'm about as good as a liar's word. Up to no good. Teenagers playing house in Hollywood. I tried my best to settle down, and you started dreaming about a wedding gown. Oh, mama, have you heard? I'm about as good as a liar's word. Oh, mama, have you heard? I'm about as good as a liar's word.
Yeah, that's the reason I got up this morning. That's the reason I came into work this morning. That's Chris Shiflett. New album is Hard Lessons. Come on in, Chris. Let's have a good conversation here. In the meantime, I want them to hear some other stuff off of this wonderful album of yours. This one is called Fool's Gold. This morning, Chris Shiflett live in studio. This is Fool's Gold. The new album Hard Lessons from Chris Shiflett, and that one was called Fool's Gold. And a very good morning to you, man. How you doing today?
Very well.
Sound, I can't believe someone can sound that great that early in the morning.
Well, sorry, I screwed up that the one song. I got confused.
No.
I get a couple of those songs. I play a capo on there. I got to have them in like a specific capo spot. So I was like, oh no, I can't. This switch, I'm gonna blow it.
Well, no, you didn't screw anything up, man. That was me. I fall on the sword for everything, man. I swear. So no, that wasn't you. That was me.
I was driving down here in my van this morning, like singing the whole way. Like I gotta get ready. I gotta warm up.
Now you've got a show tomorrow night at the Wayfair.
Yes.
All right. Tell me.
Somebody just told me, I didn't realize that the Wayfair used to be the Club Mesa.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, I've never been to this place before, but I've actually played the Club Mesa back in like, I don't know, around 1993 or 94. I actually got a gun pulled on me in the parking lot at Club Mesa one time.
No way.
Yeah.
All right. How did you handle that,
man? I did the smart thing.
Man.
I did not very brave, believe you me.
Yeah. They won't be calling him up for the Secret Service or anything.
No.
Huh?
No,
gun!
No.
Oh! Yeah. Chris, this album, man, every song I had a chance to hear it over the weekend, man, and every song on it is just delicious, man.
Oh, thank you.
Really tasty writing.
Thank you.
The last one that we just heard, Fool's Gold. Tell me about Fool's Gold a little bit.
Well, you know, this song, like all the songs, you know, I kind of went into the studio this time. This was the second time I'd worked with Dave Cobb, you know, out in Nashville, having him produce and working with all his cats out there. And I kind of figured out the first time around, like, it's better to go in less prepared, or at least less, like, stuck on your song.
Okay.
Because he's going to take it and he's going to turn it upside down. It's going to change.
Right.
And it's best to go in there with that in mind. So, I mean, I honestly don't even remember what the demo version of this sounded like, but it didn't sound like that. that much I know.
Thank you, Dave Cobb.
Yeah,
thank you,
man. It helps. A lot of these songs, I wrote with some good friends of mine, a few of them with this guy, Aaron Radieri, out there, and wrote a tune with Kendall Marvel, and wrote a friend one of the songs with my friend Brian Whelan. And then, of course, the duet I wrote with Aaron and Elizabeth Cook. But Fool's Gold was one of the ones I just wrote by myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, do you now get the ability to be more flexible when somebody wants to change something? And let's say Dave says, all right, I need to change this. Are you much more flexible than you used to be?
Without any doubt. I mean, that's the part of it that I like the most, I think, is going in there. It's the sort of the collaboration, you know, with other people that, you know, and I always say, like, in making these records with Dave, when we're tracking them, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the arrangement and, like, with the little tweaks that we made, you know, just kind of sitting there in the room. We track them all together. Me and Dave and the rhythm section are all playing live together. So I'm way more just focused on trying to get a good take for myself than I am. I'm not even paying attention to anybody else.
Right.
You know, like, it gets me out of that, like, micromanaging everybody's little part, you know, that they're doing. Which is funny, because then when you go try to learn it, how to play the songs live, like with other people, I'm always like, I don't know what the drums did. I got to sit there and listen, like, why does that sound that way?
I got to relearn my own song here, man.
Real, you know? Like, I know what I did. I just don't know what anybody else did.
Now, the second song that I'd heard, which was Welcome to Your First Heartache.
Yeah.
Oh, but that hits right here, man. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I went out to Nashville for a couple of days, a few months ahead of making the record, and I just sat with my friend Aaron, and we just sat in his writing room above the studio, you know, above RCA Studio A. He's got a little writing room up there. And I mean, I remember the night before we got going, I was just kind of sitting in my hotel room and listening to little ideas I recorded on my on my iPhone,
right?
Because it's always like, I like going into those sessions with something,
right.
You know. I don't like going in just completely empty-handed,
right? They, hands in your pocket, like,
right?
You
just wind up staring at a wall and staring at your blank pad of paper. But and I had like maybe a verse and a chorus, and I had that little guitar thing that, and I played. I remember I played Aaron that guitar riff thing,
right?
And he goes, "Oh, that's the one. Let's do something with that." And then we just fleshed it out together. And
That's a great song. Yeah. Now, so for the rest of us, like, as I heard it, I'm thinking, all right, man, I can actually draw a tear from the song.
Oh,
man.
Right,
and you're telling me I just flushed it out.
Well, I mean, it's also, you know, it's.
Am I too sensitive?
It was inspired by, you know, my oldest. I have three boys, three sons. And my oldest son right around that time had his first, like, girlfriend, you know, his first, like, teenage romance kind of thing. So it was like, I was really, like, kind of projecting heartache onto him, you know?
As every good father should.
Well, you know what I mean? It's like, he didn't tell me anything about it, really. You know, I just made the whole thing up. But, because the last person on earth that my son wants to take dating advice from is me.
I get it, man. You're not alone, man.
Yeah.
You're not alone. For your 15th birthday, you got an 82 Les Paul guitar?
Yes.
Man!
Yes.
What a gift.
I know. There was this kid at my school, Jay Duff.
Right.
And he had like a great skate ramp in his backyard. We used to hang out at his house and skate.
Right.
And that would have been like around, like, you know, the end of junior high and into high school.
Right.
And at the time, I was really pretty new at playing guitar, and I had a really corny Takamine copy of an Aria Pro 2 Explorer shape. I don't know if you remember what those look like.
I know you're talking English.
This was the mid-80s, and it was coming out of the heavy metal years. So that's what I had, and I remember Jay had a Les Paul.
Right.
I think he had maybe started playing guitar and then didn't stick with it or something. For whatever reason, he was selling it.
Okay.
And so I sold my Takamine and begged my mom to cover the rest of it. And, And she got me that guitar. And then that was like, that was pretty much the only guitar I had for a long time.
Do you still have it?
Oh, yeah. It's right. sitting in my garage right now. I need to get it. At a certain point, I thought, you know, and I'm going to stop touring with this thing because right. I just don't want to. It's like really the only guitar that I'm kind of like have a heavy sentimental attachment
right.
to, you
know, because right.
that was my only guitar through the years of being in No Use for a Name. I finally bought another Les Paul sort of towards the end of being in No Use for a Name, but then I broke the headstock. So when I joined Foo Fighters, I had one functional guitar, and it was that black 82 Les Paul. I'll tell you an interesting thing, because right. that guitar is like beat to hell. It's like I've right. put all the scratches.
I would imagine it is, yeah.
And recently, Pat Smear right. Bought off of eBay a reverb or something, bought the exact same guitar, and it was like must have been sitting under somebody's bed for the last 30 years, because it's...
Right.
It looks exactly like when I pulled mine out. I mean, I think even when I bought mine in '86 or whatever, it was more used looking than Pat's is now. But it is the exact same guitar in '82. And you know those Les Pauls, because that was in the era, it was brief,
right.
where they had these little flip-out tuner peg string winder things. It's like the greatest invention for guitar that never took off. So you can instantly recognize it. It's the exact same guitar. So Pat has like one of these days I got to convince him to sell me that thing.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. And just now every guitar nerd in town just slapped a high five with
right. I know what he's talking about there.
I mean, I don't think that era of Les Pauls are particularly like sought after, but it just means a lot to me because it's like, you know, it's the one that I had.
So Pat found the Dorian Gray of your guitar,
yes,
man. That's exactly
totally. Yeah.
Now, speaking of Pat Smear and the Foo Fighters, you turned down an audition with Guns N' Roses to audition for Foo Fighters.
Well, not quite. It was never an official audition. My buddy Bill Armstrong, right. who helped me get the audition for the Foo Fighters, had mentioned to me that he thought he could get me an audition for Guns N' Roses. But you have to bear in mind, he didn't like work for Guns N' Roses. Right? He just knew somebody that knew somebody kind of thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And he probably, to his credit, probably could have gotten me an audition.
Right.
But that story has grown over the years to like, I was in Guns N' Roses, which is not true.
I pushed Slash off stage.
Right, you know, none of that's true at all. I never even had an audition or anything like that. It was, I was just lucky to get the Foo Fighter audition, believe me.
Right. Now, normally, and again, I as I've listened to you throughout the years, you're a rocker with an amazing skill on guitar. What's the transition when you go kind of honky-tonk, when you go a little more country? Is obviously a guitar transition for the guitar nerds.
Yeah. I mean, I think honky-tonk guitar playing is really, like, and I don't consider myself, like, any kind of... anywhere near like an expert or something at it. It's something I love to
you're the only one that
to noodle
doesn't.
Around on, you know right. what I mean? But like, it's so different. I think the space that is filled by guitar in a lot of that, you know, that honky tonk era is it's also, so much more disciplined.
Right.
That for me is a lot of the struggle because you don't have like a big wall of sound to project what you're doing. You can't just hit a note and it just goes, you don't have any of that. It's like a relatively clean guitar tone on a lot of those records, kind of slappy, twangy tone. I think it's really unforgiving.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of sustain, all that sort of nerdy guitar stuff. But that's also like what drew me to a lot of those records, like a lot of those Buck Owens records. I just love the guitar playing on,
right?
As well as the songs and the storytelling. And
right. So did you listen to a lot of Roy Clark growing up?
I mean, I was a rock kid growing up, but I sort of, you know, I always had a taste for rockabilly and that kind of led me down the road of like honky tonk and stuff. And in a big way, when I was in No Use, was around the time that like Sun Volt first started making records and all that stuff. Really, you know, that was the first time I really kind of went, whoa, what's that pedal steel? You know, what influenced that guy? I want to hear that stuff. You know?
Now you've played with everybody, man. As I was stalking you online, I'm thinking, man, who hasn't he played with? If you could reach back in time, who would you like to play with? Who is somebody that you've always thought, well, man, I really would love to have played with this person?
Oh, God, like people that have passed away. Many. I mean,
someone you think you'd make a great fit with. Just like, we could have killed.
Yeah, I would love to step into the Rolling Stones in about 1969, 1971. Most of those cats are still alive,
right.
So that's still technically possible.
It is, man.
But like, as far as just like, you know, eras that have gone by, I mean, I would love to, I never got to play with Joe Strummer. That would have been a dream come true.
Right. I think, if I may, and if I can be so bold, I think you would have made a great traveling Wilbury, dude.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I think you'd have just that. Fit right in, that. Man. Yeah.
I would love to be. I mean, I don't know if you watched that new Bob Dylan documentary on Netflix.
I haven't seen Rolling it yet, but Thunder. I'm all over it.
Yeah. I would love to get dropped into the Rolling Thunder band. That would have been pretty cool.
Well, the bands you have been with, and then one of them is Chevy Metal, and Taylor Hawkins, who lives here in town or has a place here in town, and we rarely see, by the way. Let's plug it right now. Taylor, Chris had the will to come in, man. Let's have you come in here.
Yeah, this is his hometown station, man.
Yeah. So the Chevy Metal band, that has to be so much fun playing all those songs that you guys did then.
Well, I haven't played with Chevy Metal for quite a while, but it's over the years, it's been the mainstays have been Taylor. It's Taylor and Wiley's band, really, with a sort of rotating cast of guitar players over the years. And they've had a bunch of different people. And I did, as a matter of fact, the first Chevy Metal gig I ever did was here in Laguna Beach.
Right.
It was at some party up the road a little bit.
It was up on the canyon. I was there, man. I was the guy in the plaid shirt.
Yeah, that was my first show with them. And you know what? You know, it's interesting. You know, when I was a kid, first learning how to play guitar and first playing in bands and stuff, I couldn't play very, you know, I was just a little kid, so I couldn't play. I never sat down and learned how to play a Van Halen song or any of that stuff, you know. By the time I got to a point where I maybe could have done some of that, I was already into something else.
Right.
You know? So that was really fun for me to have to sit down. It's so hard. A lot of that classic rock stuff is so hard. Mm. And you can't really do what Eddie Van Halen, you know, I can't play like that. You know what I mean? So you just try to kind of get it close and get it and do something real fast. It was fun. I loved it, man. It helped my guitar playing a lot.
Catching you up on the canyon was one of the greatest shows I've ever seen, man. Just awesome. Dude. I'm like,
You know, memory sticks out at that show for me. I mean, outside of the fact that it was the first time I played with Chevy. I just remember after the first song, I leaned back and turned up my amp. Because I think before we played, Taylor was like, let's try to keep the volume down. And I leaned back. It was like I couldn't hear myself. I leaned back and cranked my amp up, and I just heard him just go, I saw that. I got you.
It's on 11 now, man. Yeah. It's on 11. The Liar's Word, the last song you performed live for us here. Tell me about that song.
That song, I mean.
Someone you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like. Like, I don't know why, but if you look back at, like, songs I've written, I tend to focus, and not so much on this new record. The new record's a lot more sort of in the here and the now, but there are some songs that are there's this, like, period of my life from, like, my late teens to my late 20s that I seem like that's where I get all my lyrical inspiration about, and I don't know why. I just always go back to that time, and that's kind of what I'm singing about. Like, you know, when I moved down to Hollywood when I was like 18 to try to like make it in the band and all that stuff and lived down there for, you know, five years or so. And it's kind of about that time.
Was there a lot of writing home for money? A lot of, hey man, I'm struggling at 18.
No, I mean, my mom didn't have any money to give me. So my mom definitely helped me out here and there a few times for sure when I was in a jam.
Right.
But no, I had to, I was that guy that like, you know, I always had to have a day job.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so I was the guy that was out till 4 a.m. and up at 6 to
working that hard life of a musician.
Woodland Hills from Hollywood, you know, to go sit in my office job. You know?
That's like 95% of musicians, really. It really is. Were your parents?
I never had the luxury of living off like my stripper girlfriend or all those sort of like rock cliches. It never happened for me, man.
You moved to the wrong part of LA, I think.
Seriously.
West a little bit there. Were your parents musically gifted?
No.
No.
My dad was really into music, and I kind of credit him for getting my older brother, Mike, I have two older brothers.
Scott and Mike.
Right. Yeah. And Mike really kicked it all off. He for whatever reason, he just like was, you know, obsessed with his records, you know, from a young age. And that just sort of passed down to the rest of us for better or worse, you know.
And
we had no other focus whatsoever but that.
Well, for the rest of the world, it turned out to be better. So
funny though. Like, again, as a parent now, I said, you know, it's so funny. Like, my kids are really good kids and responsible and do all the stuff, and they play team sports and they do their homework and all that stuff. And I look at them and I go, well, they have no time to practice guitar. <You know? laughs> it's like the opposite of my childhood. Now,
are any one of them like leading or focused toward music?
We'll see. I mean, they're still pretty young. It didn't really hit for me until high school was really when I kind of took off for me. And my oldest son doesn't seem to be particularly interested in it now. He's into some other stuff. But my younger two, especially my youngest, is like right now he's really into it, and he's into like the old records that I used to listen to when I was a kid, which is funny. Like, and I didn't force it on him. He's just kind of he found it.
He just got it.
Yeah, and I was so happy. I picked him up from summer camp yesterday, and we were driving down to the beach to pick my middle son up from his summer camp. So we had a few minutes in the car together, and my youngest son, who's 11, was picking all the songs on my iPhone, right. And he was going through, like, you know, a bunch of Kiss songs. He did, he went to Bowie.
All right.
Yeah, just some he's good deep. Stuff. Yeah, he's like, he's. I was like, God, so
11 years old, man.
To do that. That's great.
11, you know? Yeah. Now, you normally, I'm curious. So you're a soccer fan.
Yes.
What kind of coach would you be if you were coaching your kids?
Probably a terrible one. My kids, you know, the last person I used to drive them. I never coached their AYSO teams, but I used to stand on the sidelines and yell a lot, and they would get really upset with me. That was a lot of friction in my house. I had to really learn to, like, you know, bite my tongue.
You were a pretty skilled soccer player yourself, right?
Not very. I mean, I played when I was a kid. That's another internet rumor. Recently, I don't know where this one came from. I know where the other one came from, but there's a rumor out there that I had to make a choice between playing professionally and being a musician.
I read that.
Right.
I read that.
It's making the rounds. I don't know why. It's not true. I wish it was true. If it was true, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. I'd be playing for Arsenal.
Well, there's a picture of your head superimposed on Lionel Messi's body.
Oh, nice.
With a header.
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, I was not threatening him or Ronaldo for their jobs.
If you're just joining us, we're in studio with Chris Shiflett, and the new album is called Hard Lessons. We've heard a couple of great songs from Chris, and he, by the way, is going to be at the Wayfarer tomorrow night.
Yeah,
and he's touring everywhere. Pappy's and Harriet's.
Yeah, Pappy and Harriet's on Friday, and then we're going to be up in Bakersfield on Saturday, and then on Sunday in L.A. at the Moroccan Lounge. And then we haven't announced it yet, but
let's announce it here for the first time.
I'm going to go out and play at the end of August.
Okay.
Dierks Bentley puts on a festival up in Colorado.
Okay.
And I'm going to go play that. And then we've routed a bunch of dates with this band, the Cordovas, out east, going through the Midwest and into some of the South. And then that's going to wind up at Americana Fest out in Nashville.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice. Now, you're also, am I mistaken?
And we're going to announce those dates officially, like, what's today? Tuesday. We're going to, I think, look for that on Thursday.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Right on, man. Yeah. I'd love to be the first to announce it. So I'll be stalking you online, I'm sure.
There you go.
Now, you're also, am I crazy, or are you doing the Grand Ole Opry later this year?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, when I'm out there, I think around the same time as Americana, I'll be doing that again, which I did recently for the first time, and it was super, super fun.
Tell me the chill you get up your spine when you're playing the Grand Ole Opry.
It's a pretty big chill. Yeah. I mean, I was nervous. I was trying not to think about it leading into it, and the minute I got there, everybody, literally from the guy, the security guard at the back gate to every single person in the house band that runs the show that was just there for whatever reason, everybody was like, welcome to the Grand Ole Opry. Congratulations on your debut.
Dude.
It was so mental.
Yeah.
And just... It's a fun thing for me to go step into that because, you know, I'm not bringing a band with me.
Right.
And playing with the house band, who's amazing.
Right.
And it was a treat. You know, you step in and there's this big, huge house band. They all like charted out your song and they learned it and they play it better than you do. You know what I mean? Like, it was cool.
That's got to be cool.
Yeah.
You're also doing Austin and Austin City Limits, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, dude.
I know. It's
just iconic and fantastic.
Yeah.
If you've missed any portion of this, it'll be up on our website later. We're going to podcast this. You've got your own podcast too.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
Is there nothing you can't do?
There's a lot I can't do. Some would argue all the things we've talked about I can't do. Yeah, I've been doing the podcast. It's called Walking the Floor. I've been doing it since like 2013. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's mostly me talking to other musicians, a lot of like Americana and country musicians, but not exclusively.
Right.
Yeah, it's fun. I dig it. It's fun to interview people.
All right. One of these days you'll have a morning guy named Ed on there, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It's happening soon.
No, that would be like the most dead air you've ever had on that podcast. Trust me. This is Chris Shiflett, and the album is called Hard Lessons, and just a fantastic album. Where can we find you on social media?
Where I'm mostly on Instagram. I think that's where most of the activity is. It's Shifty71 on Instagram. And then I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and, you know, whatever.
And
can tell because there's the little blue check. That's the official one. And, you know, it's funny. I'm sure this happens to everybody, but people always let you know when it happens to you. There's always these, like, social media imposters out there that send people messages like, "Hi, it is me, Chris Shiflett. I love you. Thank you for your support. So that you send me money."
Wow. So that wasn't you. Who did I send the $50 to, man? Jesus. Oh. Yeah. Well, Chris, I can't thank you enough for being here. I want to twist your arm and invite you back, man. Whenever,
anytime.
When you're back in town, just come on through. All right, just walk through the door. You don't have to do anything.
I will do that.
All right, Chris Shiflett, Hard Lessons is the album. He's at the Wayfarer tomorrow night. If you're looking for information, call me here. If you missed any portion of this, it'll be up on our website and the podcast. Chris, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, sir.
All right.